With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Hello, welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. If this is the first episode of mine that you stumble upon and you enjoy it, please feel free to follow me wherever you listen to podcasts so you can get notified every time an episode goes live. If you've been around for a while and you want to rate and review, share with a friend, all of that, that would mean a lot to me. Thank you so much for tuning in. It truly means a lot to me. This episode, I'm going to continue recapping Vanderpump Rules as I have been. And then afterwards, I'm going to talk about some other shows I've been watching. Not really bulleted recaps or anything of the other shows, just a general thoughts I've been having on a few different shows, and timestamps will be in the description. So if there's a show that you're interested in my thoughts on, you can listen to just that part or just the Vanderpump Rules part. I don't really know. It's up to you, I guess, is the point of this. I don't have much to say, so I'm just gonna jump straight in. I have a lot to say about Vanderpump Rules. This season, I am honestly really tired of it. The thing that's been bothering me about Vanderpump Rules lately is that a lot of my frustrations are not even about the show itself, like not just the show. I have frustrations watching the show too. There's just been so much stuff coming from the cast members that's really been pissing me off. Honestly, mostly Lala. Like, I feel like Lala is on this weird internet crusade to hate on Ariana, and I find it really, really confusing and like really uncomfortable and frustrating as a viewer, especially a viewer who, I like Lala. I want to root for Lala. I have a lot of admiration for things that Lala's been through and the way she wants to better herself, and I have a lot of respect for people in recovery. I mean, obviously, just because you're sober or you're in recovery doesn't mean you're like a super healed. Like, it, you know, that it's not like a one size fits all. But like, I am somebody who tries my best to constantly be working on myself. I'm in therapy. I've been in therapy since I was in high school. Like, I just, one of the things that makes me the most hopeful about my life and just about people in general and relationships and all of that is that no matter what we've been through and no matter our life circumstances, and it's not easy, of course, but there's always stuff you can do to be a better version of yourself, even if it's painful, even if it's hard, even if it feels like nobody around you is making any effort to be better. Like, there's always stuff you can do. And I just admire people who work on bettering themselves, whether it be through a program or therapy or whatever. So I have a lot of respect for Lala's sobriety and just stuff she's been through. But the way she's been talking about Ariana in the media has really been bothering me. But I will get into the actual episode and maybe intercut stuff that's relevant to what she's been saying on. The one thing I do want to talk about that like really pissed me off, an interviewer asked her who has the bigger ego right now, Tom or Ariana, and she said Ariana's blowing them all out of the water. And I just find that kind of offensive because last I checked, Ariana didn't compare herself to, like, how can you say that Ariana has a bigger ego than Tom when Tom compares himself and his life circumstances and the backlash he received to like that of people who have either been murdered or accused of murder? Like, I'm sorry. It's not computing to me that you think Ariana has a bigger ego. Like, Tom Sandoval, I feel like people are treating me like Scott Peterson. I don't know. What's his name? Peterson. I think his name is Scott Peterson. If it's not, I'm so sorry to whoever Scott Peterson is. But like, he literally compared himself to a man who was accused of murdering his wife. He also compared the reaction to Sandoval to the BLM protests after George Floyd was murdered. I'm sorry. He also compared himself to O.J. Simpson. Like, you don't think he has a big, like, I'm sorry. he clearly has a very grandiose sense of self. What do you mean Ariana's blowing? Like, unless there is something we haven't seen, all Ariana's done that we've seen so far this season that Lala seems to take issue with is have a boundary and be firm in that boundary. And I even think Ariana has been flexible with her boundaries. Being around Sandoval is clearly very triggering. Like, it really bothers me because it's like she can't win either way. She doesn't want to be around him, so she doesn't go on the trip. And then, you know, people are comment on Ariana not being on the trip. Then when Ariana's around him, she gets triggered and they're like, she's too triggered. Like, she can't win. She, like, Lala's been going on and on about Ariana still living in the house as Tom and how she doesn't have a leg to stand on. And then Ariana buys another house and Lala's like, the house is like a three, like, makes some dig about the house just being a three bedroom. Like, girl, I don't know. It's really driving me crazy. And I think one of the things that pisses me off the most about Lala is that she sometimes comes from a place of superiority. She posted, like, in an Instagram Q&A, she said something about, like, how she was sure if she was just as miserable as Katie, that she and Katie would still be close. And then 2 weeks later, she's talking to anybody who will have her about Ariana and Ariana's house and Ariana's relationship with her dad and Ariana's this and Ariana's that. Like, I'm sorry. You think Ariana, like, you think Katie is, like, miserable and you don't get along because she's, like, living in her misery? What the fuck are you living in, constantly making digs at Ariana, a woman who has really seemingly done nothing to you? Like, unless Ariana on the reunion or in an episode we haven't seen yet, like, says something truly heinous about Lala, I don't understand where this energy is coming from. Like, I really don't. I really don't. It's driving me crazy because I want to root for Lala. Like, I like Lala, but it's just like, girl, give it a rest. Why do you hate Ariana this much? And she would probably be like, I'm not hating her. Like, I don't hate her. It's not hate, whatever. But it's just like, this is not happy, healed, soft girl, whatever. You're criticizing Katie? You're criticizing Katie for being miserable. I find it very confusing. But anyways, diving into the recap. Vanderpump Rules Season 11, Episode 10. It's called Line in the Sand. I love that the episodes have names, which is like, that's such a stupid thing to say, but it's like, I watch a lot of The Bachelor and those don't typically have names. It's just like episode, like, it's like week 5 or whatever. So I like it when they have names and it brings me joy. I don't know. What can I say? I was an English major. I like things like that. The episode opens with everybody getting ready. Sheena and Brock and their daughter, Joe and Schwartz are juicing something, like making juice. I don't fucking know. Ali, Katie, and Lala are exercising. That scene is kind of expanded upon. Katie does not like exercise. She's like so funny about it. She's like, I don't understand all those fitness people who say they're like addicted to endorphins because they've never felt true joy in their life because this is not. I thought that was funny. I like Katie. After the little workout, Lala asks if they're still coming to her water tasting. They say yes, and she says that she invited everybody, including Sandoval. Then at Tom and Ariana's house, Anne shows up. She says hi to Ariana, and then she goes upstairs to talk to Tom. She's like, I'm going to be helping Ariana with some assistant stuff. She's looking for an assistant. And then Anne and Ariana have like a little interview, and Tom eavesdrops. He stands at the top of the stairs and he listens. And I've seen a lot of debate about like, well, she shouldn't have been having this interview inside the house. He was right there. But it's like, there should be some like establishment of like privacy. Like, he literally got like a sound machine because he didn't want to be eavesdropped on. And like, I don't know. I find it a little bit like, yeah, maybe she shouldn't have been interviewing for another job in like the same house as him. But if she checked in with him and he didn't need anything, so she was like, I'm gonna go do this, and then he eavesdropped. Like, I don't know. I still think he's in the wrong. I also just think, I'm not saying this is 100% the case. I don't want to talk about it in like a black and white. Like, I'm really never trying to be like absolute about anything. Like, that this is 100% one way or the other. But I do feel like Again, not always, because some people can be really great in one aspect of their lives and then not be great in others. But I feel like the way somebody treats an employee, to me, would be really telling of who they are as a person, whether I want, like, I don't know. That would say a lot to me about what kind of, like, employer somebody is, especially with a role like this, where you're somebody's assistant. The way you treat your assistant really, in my opinion, would say a lot to me. And I think if Anne is unhappy at the job, I do think maybe it's because he's a bad boss. Like, I don't know. I just think there is a level of respect that you should have for an employee where, like, if you hire them to be an assistant and then they're cleaning up after you, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like the way he treats Anne. I, most of the times, I'm going to side with the employee over the employer. He has the power. She relies on him. Like, that it's her job. She relies on it financially. She only has so much say. You know, you can't go to your employer and necessarily always feel comfortable saying, I'm unhappy with X, Y, and Z. Like, it's not an easy thing. Like, people are like, oh, she should just quit. Like, the things I've seen people say about Anne, it's, like, kind of frustrating to me because it's, like, she lives in Los Angeles. This is an expensive city. You can't just quit your job because you're unhappy. Most people can't. Like, she probably doesn't have much to fall back on. And even if she does have some kind of savings, that may not get her very long. And, like, the job market right now is a nightmare. Like, I don't know. I just don't like the way people talk about Anne because I feel like, and this happens a lot on reality TV where people, I feel like, don't realize that they're talking about real people. But it's like, this isn't like a character on a TV show. She can't just like easily find another job. I'm pretty sure on the podcast that she started, she like mentioned that she was like on unemployment. It's not something where you can just easily like, oh, quit your job if you're unhappy. And Tom Sandoval doesn't really seem like the kind of person, whether you're his employee, whether you're his girlfriend, whether you're a friend, you can go to him and be like, I'm unhappy with X, Y, and Z, and it would be like resolved in a positive, constructive way. So I don't really blame Anne for the predicament she's in. I think it just further proves to me that Tom Sandoval is not somebody I would want to have in his life. I would not want to be friends with somebody who has an assistant who he treats as a housekeeper, who is clearly too scared to communicate that she's unhappy with the way things are going. Like, I don't know. I think because there's an inherent power dynamic in an employer-employee relationship. And I think if you're a good employer, you recognize that and you care about your employees and you want, and like, I don't know, like, not to get into like the dynamics of whatever, but I just think on a human level, when you're somebody's boss and they don't feel comfortable bringing issues up, especially this, it's like, I don't, like, he says later, or he said this in a clip that was not in the episode that aired, so I don't have it in my notes, but I saw it on social media after. It was like the extended, he talked about how he has an HR department. I don't think he does. To have an HR department, like, I get what he means. Like, he was trying to be like, I am a company, like, I have insurance. But it's like, if you had an HR department, that would be like a department of people. You don't have a department of people. If you're the HR, you don't have an HR department. Anyways, I'm going on an unnecessary tangent. And during her interview, she says that sometimes she has to pick up his underwear and socks. She's like looking forward to more administrative stuff. Like, that's kind of more the stuff she wants to do when Ariana starts talking about like wanting somebody to work with her more than for her, you know, and like replying to emails and that kind of stuff. And Anne is like, that is what I would be looking forward to doing. Ariana is very much like, maybe not now, but when I'm out of the house and things are different. Like, right now, I think it could get ugly, but maybe in the future. Tom in confessionals is mad about Ariana taking his assistant. He says she already got all of their friends. Now she has to take his assistant too. Like, stop being a baby. I don't. First of all, she didn't take your assistant. Second of all, she didn't get all your friends. Like, literally, she didn't get all your friends. She didn't, because Lisa Vanderpump and the devil's advocates of the group are fighting very hard for you to still be a part of it. So, like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, Tom. But anyways, then at Schwartz and Sheena's house, or Schwartz comes to Sheena's house. He brings Summer a hat, which I thought was cute. He talks about wanting to have kids. They joke about the Max and Katie thing. And then we see Ariana and Katie at Katie's place having a conversation. Ariana talks about her interview with Anne. She says that as she was leaving, Anne was in the kitchen crying because Tom got mad at her about like what he overheard. And it's very much implied that like there was some kind of reprimanding of Anne. And we find out later that Anne was either dismissed for a few days, like suspended, or she was fired. Anne has very much said she was fired. Other people have said, like, I was there. Lucinda, who's the interior designer who shows up later in the episode, says that Anne was fired, like she knows firsthand. And Anne reposted that on her Instagram story. Again, I think, and I don't know, because I've never had an employee, so I don't really know. But I just feel like, I don't know, that's a dynamic I've never experienced, so I don't want to say for sure. But I feel like if I had somebody working for me, and they were so unhappy that they were interviewing for a job within, like, I would have some kind of empathy for that. I wouldn't immediately fire Anne. I would be like, what can I do to make this better for you so we can, you know, like that. That's how, but I don't know. I've never been a boss. I just feel like in a situation where I imagine myself being some kind of like leader or whatever, or like having that kind of position of power, I feel like it's easier, not always, because maybe sometimes the person isn't the right fit or you need to move forward. But when you've had like an assistant and they've been working very closely and they know like the way you like things and things like that, like when you have that kind of relationship with like an employee, I feel like it would be easier, and I would prefer if I had an assistant to, unless they were truly unhappy and it was just not the kind of job they wanted to do. Like, I wouldn't want somebody to keep working for me if they weren't happy. But if they like wanted to still do the assistant thing, but they were just unhappy with the tasks, like I would want, instead of like looking for a new person and inconveniencing myself in having to hire somebody new and also putting this person out of a job, I would rather work with the person to come to a place where it could be a job that works for them and also works for me. Like, I don't know. That's what I would want to do if I was an employer. But I've never had an employee, somebody working below me. I don't, like, I'm not trying to speak as if I know what that experience is actually like. I just feel like Tom immediately firing Anne instead of maybe being like, what could we do to make this the kind of work situation that you would want, again, says to me something about, but again, I've never had an employee, so maybe I'm just like speaking out of my ass. I don't know. I don't like Tom Sandoval. But anyways, Katie says that she doesn't like the invasion of privacy in regards to Tom eavesdropping. And she also feels like Sheena kind of invaded her privacy with the tracking of Max. And I agree, because I think there's a difference between having somebody's location for safety and, like, Sheena literally says that she checked his location, was like, oh, that's weird that he's at Katie's. And then she checked it again. To me, that's weird, right? I don't know. I think most people think that's weird. Whether her having people's locations in general is weird, I don't really know. I like to believe it the best in people. If Sheena didn't gleefully talk about like rechecking his location to figure out if he was there overnight, maybe I would be more like, maybe she just cares about people's safety. But they're like checking again. Like, I would want to just, if I checked somebody's location and I saw that they were somewhere familiar, if I like a friend, like I was in a night out and then a friend of mine, we lost each other and I wanted to make sure they were safe, and then I saw that they were at somebody's house who I know, I would be like, okay, cool, they're safe. That's all that it would matter. Like, unless they were like somewhere unfamiliar, I don't know. I would not check again to make, like, you know, that's where it crosses the line and it becomes kind of like invasive, where it feels like she was like, oh, that's weird that he's at Katie's, and she checked again because she wanted to figure out if he did something with Katie. To me, that's where it gets weird. Like, just checking that people are safe, okay, I don't particularly care. We live in a surveillance state, yada yada. But like, the checking again is where it becomes spying on people. But anyways, back to Sheena's house. The scenes are kind of intercut with each other. Back at Sheena's house, that scene continues. They talk more about the Max thing. Sheena is still mad that Brock said something. Brock brings up the fact that last summer Katie wished for Sheena's world to burn. Schwartz says, and okay, here's the thing. I really can't stand Brock. I'm gonna be honest. I try very hard when I watch these shows to not judge people's characters, to not like be like, I don't like this person. I mean, honestly, that I don't really care about as much, because I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with disliking a person. I mean, I don't claim to dislike them truly individually on a personal level because I don't know them. But do I enjoy watching them on TV? Do they rub me the wrong way? I don't feel uncomfortable saying that, because I'm not saying there's anything necessarily wrong with people who I don't like. I'm just saying I don't enjoy them. They bother me. But Brock is really somebody who specifically really gets on my fucking nerves. He drives me crazy. Brock drives me crazy. Every time he talks, I'm like, why are you on this show? Shut the fuck up. I can't stand Brock. I'm not gonna lie. He triggers something in me, and I can't exactly pinpoint what it is, but he pisses me off. It's like, do I think Katie's, like, is not the most tactful or the best communicator sometimes? Is she kind of, like, not the best at expressing herself? Sure. Like, she does communicate very emotionally. She name calls. She speaks very emotionally in a way that can sometimes be harmful. And do I think if I was in a relationship with Katie, like a friendship, whatever, if I had Katie in my life and we got into a fight and she talked about my world burning, do I not think that obviously I would be very upset. I'm not saying that Katie is infallible or whatever, but I feel like context really matters. And again, Katie is not like, she is sometimes harsh with her words, but it's almost always in really emotional moments. When she said the thing about her world burning, the situation was that Katie got a divorce. She was in love with somebody who was not treating her well. They had a 12-year relationship where she was constantly being mistreated. Whether Sheena sees it that way or not, in my opinion, that is what was happening. And she walked away from a relationship that she still very much loved the person because he was not treating her well. And in the divorce, in hopes of being amicable, because she still cared for this person, she requested of him to not hook up with people in their circle because, one, they work on a show together. And like, to me, I feel like that would be one of like the most obvious reasons why it's kind of inconsiderate to hook up with people in the show, because you will have to be asked about that, you know, and it's fresh. She asked that of her ex. And not only did he disrespect it, but he disrespected it and had people pushing, like egging him on to disrespect Katie's boundary. And Sheena was one of those people who publicly was talking about Schwartz and Raquel, who was very much pushing for Schwartz and Raquel, who was very much just didn't give a fuck about Katie's wishes after a very painful experience, because I'm sure even if it was her own choice, it's not a pleasant thing to end a relationship that isn't serving you. I have a lot of respect for Katie because it's hard to end a relationship, and especially where she tried for like over a decade. I don't know. I really, really empathize with Katie. And I just, like, it drives me crazy that Brock is like, well, she said that she wanted your world to burn. It's like, yeah, she did, because she clearly felt like you didn't give a fuck about her world and her feelings. And that part is just kind of ignored. I don't know. And in the same vein, when Schwartz is talking in the same scene about how it's hypocritical because Max is one of his closest friends and he only kissed Raquel once and she was on the periphery, I find this really frustrating. I find this whole thing really frustrating because she asked you for one thing and fresh, like really soon after, you couldn't even respect that. And now, like a year later, she is doing something that you never even asked her not to do. And she's a hypocrite. She's not a hypocrite. She asked you after like a 12-year relationship where you continuously disrespected her. She asked you to respect one request. You could not respect it. And now a year later, she's not considering your feelings because you didn't give a fuck about hers. I don't really think that's hypocritical. I think that is, you're not owed respect from people you've disrespected. Like, I don't know. I don't think it's hypocritical to not consider somebody's feelings who hasn't been considering your feelings? Is it better to consider people's feelings? I mean, maybe, but not at the detriment of your own. Like I don't know. And Katie has said now that, like, it was an emotional thing. She wasn't thinking it through. Like, but I really don't like that he's, like, treating it like it's the same thing, because to me, they're very clearly two completely separate situations. But anyways, then Katie and Ariana's chat is continued. Again, the scenes were kind of intercut. Katie says that in regards to the Max thing, she says it was coming off of finding out about Schwartz and Sheena. She says in confessionals that Tom can be upset, but she shouldn't feel bad. It's not like they had an agreement, which I thought was funny. Then they get a text about the water thing when they're together, Katie and Ariana do. Ariana says that it's not realistic for her to not be in the same room as Sandoval, like, ever, so she's going to go. Again, I think even this within itself, what really drives me crazy about the way they're treating Ariana is that if I had a friend who, like, if I was in this situation and Ariana, put herself in this situation, I would be like, thank you so much for, like, trying to make the show and pushing through and being in this uncomfortable situation to try to make the show. Like, I would be appreciative of the steps that Ariana was willing to take and the concessions she was willing to make, even if she was making herself uncomfortable, to try to be part of the group. Like, I would be appreciative of that. They see any effort and they're like, it's not enough. Well, you put yourself in this position, but you shouldn't be angry. Ugh, I don't know. Like, it really, I don't know. It drives me crazy the way they're treating Ariana. But anyways, the water tasting is at Ali and James's house. And Martin, the water sommelier, is here. And I actually know Martin, the water sommelier, not personally, like, on an individual level. Like, he doesn't know me from Adam, but I know him from the internet. I thought it was funny, James, when he's talking about him, he's like, I've seen him on the news. And then they show clips of him on TikTok. That's me. I'm like, I've seen this Martin guy on the news. And the news is just the H3 podcast. He was on H3 podcast as a water sommelier. And I loved that segment. And then he's shown up a few times since. I myself really love water, so I get it. I have to be honest. I love it. I understand both sides. Like, the thing is, water, objectively, not all water tastes the same. But also, water obviously tastes differently. But I also understand where later Katie's like, this is not like a wine tasting. Because objectively, a wine has many notes, you know? Wines have you don't just like, that's a thing with wines, they have notes, you get like different aromas and different, like, water, they taste differently, but it's like, what notes are you getting? Like, it has one ingredient, it's water. I don't know, like, I understand both sides, because not all water tastes the same, but also, who has that much interesting things to say about the taste of water? I just am like, some waters taste better. But I guess that's why I'm not a sommelier, because I can't taste the wine or I can't taste the water and be like, I'm getting notes of, but I don't even know if that's what Martin does. I don't want to disrespect him. Because, like, with wines, I don't know much about wines, but I can taste like two separate rosés and be like, this one tastes more like this and this one tastes more like this, you know? Like, I can taste the difference in two rosés. The same way I can taste differences in, like, beers, you know? Or, like, even, like, I don't know, teas. Because it's like a beverage that has, like, a, you know? Does that make sense? And I love water, okay? I'm a big fan of water. No offense to the water community. I just don't understand. I say that. I'm like, I've seen Martin. And then I'm also like, but I don't really understand what he means. But anyways, I mean, he does talk about, like, some of the water being milky, it coming from two separate streams, it tasting like certain things. I don't know. I do find it interesting. I'm sure he's very expensive, but I would love to do a water sommelier. Like, I find this, I would have a good time, honestly. Anyways, Lala arrives to the water tasting. She's super excited. Sheena and Brock arrive. And Sheena brought alcohol. She's like, she brought like Smirnoff something. And she's like, this goes really good with sparkling water. I thought that was funny. Then Katie, Dana, and Ariana arrive. Brock greets Katie, says he'll talk to her later, and like briefly says he's sorry. Katie in confessional says that Maybe this is payback because she talked about his private life and we see a flashback to her talking about his family situation. Because if you don't know, I mean, I don't know. I imagine people who watch the show, like who anybody listening to this recap knows the history of Brock. But Brock has a family or had a family in Australia, I believe. I'm Googling him because I don't want to confuse Australia with New Zealand because, you know, that's kind of disrespectful. Okay, he's from Australia or his kids or his ex was in Australia. So he had kids that he has kids that he's no longer in contact with. And that came up in one of the earlier seasons, I believe season 9, because it didn't happen last season. So season 9. And it was a big plot line because people were like, why doesn't he talk to his kids? That's kind of weird. And there were domestic violence allegations against him. He stopped paying, like he does not speak to his kids, which I, you know, that's really none of my business, but I do just find it kind of like, you shouldn't, I don't know. I find it really annoying when Brock is like talking from like a point of, I don't like it when he judges Ariana and her anger or like what she should be doing to resolve the conflict and make things, because it's like you don't even talk to your kids, like you, and I'm sure it's a very complicated situation, but like if you haven't even been able to like be an effective enough communicator or mend fences or like I'm sorry, if you have like that big of a relationship in your life, which is estranged, you literally have children on this planet that you haven't been able to like mend the fence to be able to have some sort of a relationship with, then I really don't think you should be speaking on like somebody mending a fence or like being able to coexist. Like you can't even, I don't know. I find that kind of hypocritical. If I was estranged from like people, I mean, I just in general wouldn't be talking the way he does about like what Ariana should be doing to heal and for her, whatever. Like I find that annoying in general, but it's just also like Brock, you literally are like, shut the fuck up, Brock. He drives me crazy. I really can't stand Brock. And you know what the thing is? It's like, what redeeming qualities does Brock have? And I'm not saying that as a human being. I don't know Brock. Maybe he's a lovely person in real life. But on the show, all we see is him being an asshole about Ariana, him being an asshole about Sheena's OCD. Like, sure, he defends Sheena every once in a while. But, like, mostly what we see of Brock, and maybe the editors are doing him dirty, is him fighting with Sheena, him shitting on Ariana. I don't enjoy Brock. Why is he here? Anyways, moving on. Lala in Confessionals talks about how much water has meant to her. And honestly, I kind of like this. Like, I liked that. Like, some people might laugh at Lala, but that's me about, like, Arizona green tea. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, I love a good tea, you know? I love a good sparkling water. And I'm not sober. Like, I drink every once in a while, but I'm not, like, a big drinker. And I, you know, whatever, but many times in college, I would just be drinking water, and I get it. Like, I feel like I get it. I'm not judging Lala for that. There's other things that bother me about Lala. I'm not going to critique her passion for water. I think it's beautiful when people have passions, whether that be water. Like, I don't know. People feel very passionately about wines, and again, I do think wines, like, they have maybe more flavor profiles, but I also just think it's like, if we're gonna let people really care about wine, which, you know, alcohol has very negative effects to your body a lot of the time, like, why are we gonna then criticize people having relationships with water? I think that's beautiful, and I think in a sobriety journey, appreciating water and enjoying different kinds of water and making that like your thing, I think that's beautiful. You know, like, I'm not going to criticize that. Of all the things that bother me about Lala, her passion for water is certainly not one of them. And I would love to try different kinds of water. They do try a $1,000 bottle of water, and it's the only one in the United States of America. That's, like, crazy. They're like, how many are these in the world? And he's like, I don't know in the world, but this is the only one in the country. I'm like, that's crazy. It's wasted on all these haters. I would have loved to try that water, Martin. I just, you know, Martin seems delightful. Like, I would just like to be his friend. Katie in confessional says it's just water. I found this funny. Again, the same way that I'm not going to, like, hate on, like, judge Lala for having a passion for water, I'm also not judging Katie for being like, I don't see the difference, it's just water. And Lala was also last episode shitting on their sandwich tasting. So, anyways, Martin leaves, and as soon as Martin leaves, shit hits the fan. You know, his vibes were so immaculate that as soon as he left, everybody, it delved into chaos. That is the importance of staying hydrated. You know, he is water. Brock asks Sandoval about tea. I don't really care about this. Pizza arrives. Sheena mentions wanting ranch, and Sandoval, like, chases after the delivery person to see if they have ranch, and they don't, and Ariana says he's doing too much. Tom in confessionals is upset that she's making comments about him. He says he's been working to rebuild relationships, but with Ariana pressuring people to choose her, the deck is stacked against him. And I just don't think he's done. Like, maybe he is slowly starting to do somewhat of a better job mending relationships, but I just feel like he hasn't done that great of a job to mend relationships, and I don't like that he's putting it all on Ariana. I think the people who have mended their relationships with you, they've done most of the legwork. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I think James is, like, fine with you because he's trying to be healthy for himself. I think the people who have forgiven you and are literally, it's not because you've done a good job in mending the fence, it's because they've realized that they are not going to get, like, the kind of apology they need from you, and they just want to be cool for their own mental health. Like, that is what I feel like it is. Maybe they have seen, like, genuine tears or remorse from you, I don't know. But I don't think you've done, like, a great job apologizing. I think some people are just more willing to forgive and forget for their own healing. But that's just my opinion. I really don't see Sandoval as doing a great job mending relationships. Like, I don't. But that's just me. Then outside all the boys chat, Tom tells them that Ariana asked he questions on their date. He thinks it was tacky. I think it's tacky to bring a first date somewhere you know your ex is, especially an ex you cheated on. You're filming in the show, she's on the show, you bring your first date to a location they're filming. It's very likely she'll be there because you're on a show together. Like, if you're gonna call that tacky, but you also don't think it's kind of tacky to, like, have a bunch of girls to your house that you share with the ex whom you cheated on. Like, it's weird to me. It's weird to me. I just don't. This is why I just don't think Tom Sandoval is, like, sorry or accountable, because he calls Ariana tacky. He, like, criticizes the way she handles things without having an ounce of, like, it drives me crazy. I'm not making any sense, because I'm just genuinely, I feel like I go on and I repeat myself, and it's like, I don't have to say the same things every week. Like, we get it. Sandoval, bad communicator. Brock says they're in the beginning phases of figuring out how they can be in the same room together. I, like, why is Brock giving his opinion? Okay, this is kind of a low blow, but, like, you couldn't even figure out how to have a relationship with your children. Why are you commenting on like, sorry, that's kind of mean. I shouldn't comment on people's children. I don't mean it in, like, that regard. It's just, like, so stupid to me that he's the one saying this. I'm like, shut the fuck up, Brock. Shut the fuck up. Anyways, then we see the girls inside talk, and Ariana talks to them about Anne and Anne being sent home. And Lala's like, this is a big deal. Like, she was, like, your middle person. Who's gonna do that? And Ariana's like, my lawyer can do that. And they're like, that doesn't really make much sense. Like, your lawyer's not gonna be like, can Ariana use the tonal now? And I will say, I do agree with this. I do think Anna's a very necessary person, and the role she plays is not one that, like, a lawyer can necessarily play. In that regard, I do agree with them. I don't think that this means that she should leave the house or whatever. Like, I don't know. I do think it's, like, without Anne, she's even more, she's in an even more uncomfortable position. Katie goes outside, and she and Schwartz have a conversation. She jokes she's putting on the Schwartz pants and taking a walk in them. He says he's not mad, and she says she might have been in an extreme fuck it mentality because he had fucked her over for years and years. In confessional, she says he disrespected her for years, so why is she going to give it a thought? Exactly. I have no comment on that, because that's just, it is, that's exactly the truth. He brings up Raquel, and she's like, I had one request, and then he calls it a flimsy agreement. And she's like, this is the exact problem. Like, my feelings were constantly flimsy to you. And he's like, that's not true. In confessionals, he says that Max is his best friend. They had an agreement, although he was the one to betray it. Katie did also kind of fuck up, and it's nice that she's a fuck up too. I don't think those things are really one-to-one. I think circumstances matter. And I also just think, like, it really bothers me specifically because when Schwartz was doing this, like, fresh after the divorce, after Katie had asked him not to, all these people were like, Katie's being unreasonable. Katie has no reason to be upset. Katie, like, nobody was on Katie's side, right? I mean, some people were on Katie's side, but, like, a lot of people were shitting on Katie and telling her that she didn't have the right to be upset. And then she does something that Schwartz isn't even mad about. It's not even something he asked of her. It's a agreement that he broke first. And they're mad at Katie. They're mad at Katie. The same people who weren't mad at Schwartz. Like, it's just like, I don't know. I'm sorry. You can't make me hate Katie. Is she flawed? Sure, everybody is. But I like her. She makes great TV. And she's somebody that I would want to be friends with. Like, I would rather be friends with a Katie who maybe doesn't always communicate, like, I don't know, like, is kind of hurtful sometimes. Because you know what? They're all kind of hurtful on the show sometimes. They all make digs. It's part of, I mean, not all of them, maybe. I don't want to speak in, like, absolutes. But, like, I'd rather have somebody be loyal who's kind of shady, or I wouldn't even say Katie's shady. I think she's blunt, she's direct. I like Katie. What can I say? I like Katie. He calls a truce, says that they should get dinner, and she jokes about his clothing. It's, like, fun between them. I won't lie, I enjoy watching Schwartz on TV, and I love Katie. Like, I like their dynamic. I saw a tweet that was like, I really like the Katie and Schwartz dynamic now that she, like, the dynamic is so much nicer to watch now that Katie has realized and accepted that Schwartz isn't going to be the person that she needs him to be in a relationship with him. Like, their dynamic is just, they're fun to watch together when there's not that, like, looming, he's a shitty partner to her, which I agree with that. But anyways, back inside, Brock asks about the Anne situation, and Ariana explains that Anne wanted to work for her and that the attempted dog murderer was eavesdropping. And when she went to go to Katie's, Anne was crying, and that's all she knows. And Brock's like, what's that about the attempted dog murderer? And Sandoval is like, oh, she's talking about me. Brock is confused, and then everything, like, delves into chaos. Ariana says Tom went into her room and he shouldn't have. In confessionals, she explains that he not only went into her room, but locked the dog in there for hours. And again, there's a lot of back and forth, lots of opinions on whether this is Ariana's fault or not. I think leaving the dog unattended without verifying that the dog is in a safe place is a careless act on his part. He was clearly not trying to kill the dog intentionally, but there's a reason that negligence is a crime. Do I think that he committed a crime? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But there is a reason why negligence is something that you can be tried for, because it's not always about, like, he didn't try to murder the dog, but he was negligent. And if the dog had died, it would have been because of his negligence. Like, he needs to just learn to say that he's sorry. He's always so focused. This is my biggest issue with Tom Sandoval. If I could have one conversation with him, it would be, it's not always about your intent. When people say that they're upset about something, and yeah, okay, being called an attempted dog murderer, maybe, you know, murderer has a level of, like, they're talking about your intent, okay? But she's upset, she's hurt, you've hurt her a lot. She's communicating emotionally, okay? But this is an issue that is very consistent in the way Tom Sandoval replies to critiques, to any issue people have with him. It really seems like a consistent pattern where he's so focused on, well, I didn't mean it this way. My intentions weren't bad. Like, he's so focused on his intent that the person he harmed, it's like he needs to just learn to say, I'm sorry. Like, this clearly caused you a lot of pain. I should have been more careful. I didn't mean to, but it was clearly careless on my part. I'm really sorry. If I could have one conversation with Tom Sandoval, it would be when people say that you hurt them, they are not talking about your intent. You need to stop focusing on your intent, because then you focus the conversation on you. It's not about you in that moment. Somebody is saying, I am hurt. Somebody is in pain because of something you did. You didn't mean to, but you caused them pain. And when you're trying to explain your intent or how you didn't mean to, what you're doing is invalidating their feelings. You're saying, well, I didn't mean to, so you don't have the reason to be upset. Or that's what you're saying. That's what you're telling people. That is the one message I wish I could get across to Tom Sandoval, to stop focusing on his intent. Yes, it was an accident. You weren't trying to kill the dog. But at the end of the day, the dog was in danger because of something you did. And you just have to say you're sorry. It's really not that hard. I have had dogs in my care eat things, and I didn't mean to. And it feels really shitty to in any way, because you didn't mean to cause the dog harm. You care about the dog. You don't want somebody questioning whether you tried to hurt the dog. But if somebody's hurt and they're like, my dog almost died, it's really not like an effective thing to be like, you have no reason to be upset, the dog's fine. And that's his attitude. Tom Sandoval needs to just learn how to say, I'm sorry, it was a mistake, I didn't mean to, but it was careless, and I'll be more careful next time. Like anything, like literally anything. It's always, well, the dog didn't actually die. Just learn to say sorry without dismissing, without invalidating, without deflecting, without, like, I cannot think of a single time this season, maybe, I don't know, because I don't have the best memory, but at least in this season, where somebody has brought an issue to Tom Sandoval and he hasn't in some way been like, it wasn't that bad, or, well, you did this to me, but worse. Like, it's never, I'm sorry, end of sentence. It's, I'm sorry, but you did this to me 10 years ago. I'm sorry, but, like, literally, like, you know, like, it feels like satire, but it was like a real thing that happened. When Tom Sandoval got backlash for comparing the reaction to Sandoval to the BLM protests and the OJ Simpson trial, he put out an Instagram story that literally said, I'm sorry about the article. I know people are mad about the article, but like, Ariana hasn't paid rent in 5 months or something. I don't know how many months, but he literally, like, that was his response, was like, yeah, I said something wrong, but Ariana hasn't paid the mortgage. Like, the man, that is the one thing that I wish I could drill into Tom Sandoval's head. Stop focusing on your intent. It's not about your intent. And I get that it's probably like coming from a place of like defensiveness, and he's probably triggered and he feels like they're saying something about his sense of self. But it's like, it's not about you in that moment. It's not about you. She's hurt because something you did led to pain, and she's probably especially sensitive because she dealt with a lot of loss this past year. She lost her dog, she lost her grandmother, she lost the relationship she had been in for 10 years of her life. Like, her entire life as she knew it was over. Whether it's a better life now doesn't take away from the fact that she dealt with a great amount of loss, and she's probably especially sensitive to death, to loss in general. Like, it, oh god, anyways. Ugh. Ariana calls out Tom's carelessness, and he is like, you never changed the cat's litter box again. With the deflection. Like, learn to just say you're sorry. What the fuck did the cat have to do with this? We're talking about the dog and you bring up the cat. I'd be pissed off too. Like, I'm sorry. Tom Sandoval, if the litter box, if you genuinely have like an issue with the litter, like my issue with Tom Sandoval is that he brings up issues in the moment to deflect. And it's like, I don't think you actually give a fuck about the litter box. I feel like you are being criticized, and instead of just like accepting the criticism, listening to it, acknowledging it, apologizing, you have to deflect blame onto somebody else. It's like, okay, yeah, but like, you never clean the cat's litter box, so who cares? Like, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. I wouldn't want to work for Tom Sandoval either. How can anybody witness Tom Sandoval and then in any way fault Anne for like maybe not feeling comfortable and safe to have a conversation with Tom, to be like, I would rather be doing this? I would be mortified if Tom Sandoval was my boss, to have a conversation with him about how I was not happy with the tasks I was performing, or about how I would want, you know, if you have a good boss, like that kind of conversation about, I'm not feeling fulfilled, is there like a different kind of thing I could do, especially with a job like being an assistant, you know? if you feel like you want to do more managerial duties or whatever, like, I'm sure that there are ways to adjust your workload if you're an assistant. Like, get a housekeeper and then Anne can take care of more appointments and stuff. I don't know. Like, it bothers me. Tom Sandoval doesn't seem like somebody that you could have a productive conversation with. She's obviously gets mad about the deflection. She says he shouldn't have been in her room. It's the only place she has in the home that he wrecked. In confessional, Sandoval says that Ariana's taken a quick turn from accident to dog murderer. He says there's no dead dog. It's ridiculous. And again, this is just him dismissing it. She's hurt. And instead of being like, I'm sorry, this is clearly a really upsetting situation, he's defensive. It's not about you. The dog almost died. Like, I'm sorry. Like, the dog was in danger. Thank God the dog didn't die, but you care more about the attack on your character than you do about the fact that your dog almost died because of your behavior. That, to me, is concerning. The dog was in real harm, and just because she's okay, it doesn't mean that it wasn't a dangerous situation, and it doesn't mean that Ariana's fear and anger and anxiety and pain about that danger that her dog was in isn't real. It doesn't mean that it's not valid. It doesn't mean that you didn't play a part in that and that you shouldn't apologize and acknowledge that. I'm really, really frustrated. And I just, again, every week I watch the show and I don't understand how anybody could be watching the show, living these situations, and still coming away thinking that Ariana is being unreasonable, that Ariana is in the wrong here. I don't know about the exact verbiage she uses when she's like, later in the episode, she's like, I can't have a productive conversation with like a gaslighting, manipulative, I don't know, I'm not a therapist, I'm not here to, like, I don't really know, I'm not an expert in those kind of things. But regardless of what you label it, I don't understand how you can like witness this conversation and then still come away. And maybe they edited it down in a way that's completely not real to the way it happened on TV. They haven't, none of the people who, like Lala, none of the people who are criticizing Ariana for staying in the house, for the dog thing, none of them are saying this isn't how it happened. I don't understand how you can watch this conversation and witness Tom's deflection, Tom's inability to empathize with Ariana's pain, to put his ego aside. Everything is so focused on his sense of self. He feels he's being attacked, and that's the only thing he can focus on. He can't focus on the fact that the dog was in danger. It's like, well, the dog isn't actually in danger. I don't understand how you can watch this and think Ariana's being unreasonable. I don't understand it. Like, regardless of what word it is, whatever the root cause of Tom's behavior is, I don't understand how Ariana is the unreasonable one in the situation. I feel like I'm going crazy. He says she isn't replying to emails. Again, what's with the deflection? She says her lawyer will be in touch. He makes a comment about the lawyer not being professional because it's taken so long. She then brings up him leaving a door open and how, again, and that's more proof that he's careless, and this is all very uncomfortable for me to watch. She says it's another example of his carelessness and his callousness when it comes to her dream home and her children. She yells at him to get the fuck away from her. He's making like mean comments about how she needs to put like her big girl panties on and reply to an email. She yells at him to get the fuck away from her. He comes back and gets mad at her. He says she's gotten everything. She's gotten campaigns, and now she's taking his assistant. She says she's being harassed and will call 911. She says he ruined her life, her home, and then attempted to kill her dog by locking her in her room. And Sandoval eventually leaves. Katie and Schwartz outside wrap up their conversation, and she says that she won't fuck any more of his friends, and it's like, they're fine now. Ariana talks to the group about the skewers her dog ate, the $6,000 bill. She's like defending herself. She's like, I don't have a right to like leave something on my table if I lock the door and am responsible like I always am, which I agree. Lala in confessional says that Tom shouldn't have been in the room, but the dog eating the skewer meat is Ariana's fault for not throwing her trash away. And I think it's not that simple. Like, I think, is it a little, it, like, I don't know. I don't need to rehash this because I went over it last week, but it's like, I have a cat who likes to eat plastic, right? If I put something plastic or yarn, my cats like to eat yarn, and they shouldn't eat string because it can cause a blockage and they might need surgery and die. It's like really dangerous if a cat eats string. They like slurp it like a noodle. It gets stuck in their intestines and they can die. Like, it's serious. And I do cross stitch stuff every once in a while. I have yarn, I have thread, right? And I keep it in a drawer or a closet, right? If somebody were to open a drawer of mine because they were looking for something and they don't close the drawer, and then my cat gets into the drawer and eats yarn, I mean, it's kind of different, I guess, because it's not trash, but it's just like, at the end of the day, he was the one who left the dog unattended without verifying that it was safe. It's like, should I maybe not have yarn in my house at all if my cat would get into it? Maybe, but it, like, I don't know. I just think at the end of the day, it's like, if you do what you can to leave something closed off where the animal who would want to eat the thing can't reach it, and then somebody comes and without your permission leaves it open and gives the animal access, I don't really think it's your fault for having the thing there in the first place, because Ariana left it in a place where the dog was not, like, she didn't leave the, like, you know what I mean? Anyways, but I am just going on and on, and anyways, I just, like, the dog got hurt on Sandoval's watch. He didn't make sure that the dog was safe. It's not that hard for him to understand. Sandoval calls Schwartz and, like, talks and kind of, like, explains what happened. He says Ariana called him a dog murderer. Schwartz says things like that happen with dogs. And, like, the thing is, they shouldn't. Like, yes, they do happen with dogs. But that's why you try to be careful. And that's why this was careless. And I'm just repeating myself. Sandoval says the rage Ariana had in there was what he dealt with during their relationship. And what I will say is that if this rage is what he had to deal with in their relationship, then his inability to say sorry and have a productive, compassionate conversation where he doesn't immediately go in defense mode and it's not immediately about his sense of self being threatened, then, like, I imagine that that was her experience throughout their entire relationship, that she would have a problem with him and he would deflect, he would invalidate, he would dismiss. If this rage is the way she was in your relationship, it's probably because this era of not being accountable for anything is how you were in the relationship. So then Ariana inside says that's why she doesn't talk to him, he can't take responsibility, and I agree. It's not hard to say I wasn't as careful as I should have been and I'm sorry. It's really not that hard, because you're not a perfect, nobody's perfect. It's okay to say I made a mistake, I'm sorry. But he doesn't say that. He's like, I was an accident, jeez, why are you so upset? Anyways, moving on. Lala says Ariana's going to have a conversation with him. She says she's not capable of having a productive conversation with somebody like him. Again, I don't blame her. Sheena in confessional says she feels for Ariana and how upset she is. What's best for her would be to process it and move on. And the thing that gets me is I feel like when Ariana tries to do that, they judge the way she does that. So she can't win. She can't win. She can't, like, the next day we see people getting ready. We see Katie text Ariana asking if they're going to the beach that day, and Ariana replies that she isn't going to miss out because of Sandoval. Then at Sheena and Brock's house, we find out that their potential nanny isn't available. Brock says that when they find somebody, it'll be really worth it. In confessionals, he says a nanny will help him figure out what he's doing next in his career. I do not care. At this point, there's a will they or won't they find a nanny narrative. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. Sheena says that they should uninvite Sandoval after last night and to the beach day. And Brock's like such an asshole about this. He says that if Ariana can't handle it, she shouldn't go to places. But it's like, then when she literally a couple episodes ago said to Lala, like, I will remove myself. Lala said that's exactly what Sheena's worried about. So now Ariana is pushing herself to be in these spaces and not remove herself. And they're like, well, you shouldn't be there. It's like, she can't win either way. She can't win either way. I saw an edit to Mad Woman by Taylor Swift. And I really, it's so true. It's so true. No one likes a mad woman. He says if she doesn't step up to the plate and figure it out, that's on her. He criticizes how triggered she was by somebody just walking past her. And it's like, you mean a man who hurt her deeply has not been apologetic or kind at all? The thing about Sandoval is that he's not only not been apologetic, he has gone on and on about how bad of a partner she was, basically, like, justifying his behavior. If somebody, like, betrayed me the way Sandoval betrayed me, and then not only didn't really truly apologize, but went on and on about how bad of a person I am. Like, I'm sorry, I'd be pissed off too. Like, I would be really hurt too. Like, I just, yeah, I would be triggered by that person's presence as well. Fuck you, Brock. I'm sorry. Sheena says Brock also gets heated quickly. So, like, how can he judge Ariana for getting heated around somebody she hates and somebody who did something irresponsible, which led to her dog having to go to the hospital? And it's like, thank you, Sheena. I agree with you. Brock says that Ariana should accept Tom's apology for her own sanity, and it's like he hasn't really apologized. And I also just think this is kind of like rushing the process. Like, she will, maybe, like, or she won't, but this is like really fresh after. They are treating Ariana like 5 or 10 years have passed and she's like still harping on Sandoval. This like just happened. This just happened, and she's also still in like a legal situation with him where she is trying to make sure that she leaves the house in a financially secure place for herself. Like, it's not over. Like, there's this unresolved conflict with the house that they're judging her for, but she's doing everything she can legally to make sure she's not fucked over in the process. But anyways, Sheena says Ariana just isn't there yet. And again, thank you, Sheena. It's a process, in my opinion. Like, she's not there yet. It doesn't mean she never will be. And if she never is, that's really not my business. I don't particularly care. Sandoval seems like a horrible person. I don't really... Okay, horrible. I try not to make moralistic judgments. I don't like Sandoval. Anyways, I wrote in my notes, have these people, like, never heard the concept of, like, people getting help when they want to get help? Like, obviously, it's a different thing. But it's, like, pushing somebody to forgive or pushing somebody to heal will not help them heal. You have to be ready. You have to be ready. And I'm not saying like encouraging people or like, you know, that's not what I'm saying at all. But I think the way they're doing it in the kind of pushy manner, in my opinion, is not the correct way to do it. Because then she's moving on. And I think this is part of where her anger is coming from, that she's putting herself in these uncomfortable situations for people, and then they're not sticking up for her. She doesn't feel safe. It's a negative environment for her. Like, and she's doing it for them, and they're not even, like, happy. They just want more from her. When you push somebody in their healing process for your convenience and your comfort, not only is it not going to be healthy for them, but then they're going to resent you. Like, I don't know. I don't understand this entire thing. Sheena in confessional says that this is the best thing to have happened to Ariana. It brought her opportunities and prosperity. And I just hate this narrative. Like, I personally hate this narrative because just because she made lemonade out of the lemons doesn't mean that they were, like, naturally sweet. Like, somebody rising up through pain and making the most of it doesn't make it an inherent positive. In time, yes, redirection and the new life that she is rebuilding for herself will probably be greater than anything that she could have had with Sandoval. But that doesn't mean that her life falling apart and the loss, that doesn't mean that it wasn't still a loss, you know? I really don't like this narrative because I feel like when you go through like a traumatic event, if you, like, there's really no winning, because if you buckle under the pressure, you're weak. You're judged for that too. You're still emotional. You, whatever. But then if you rise above and you make the most and you move on and you keep pushing and you persevere, then the pain you went through is invalidated and you're treated like it wasn't that big of a deal because you're fine now. You're fine now, so it wasn't that big of a deal. You really can't win. You can't win. And I don't like this narrative. I don't like this narrative because it feels like they're saying, well, you should be fine now. You have no reason to be upset. It ended up being better for you. And it's like, maybe it was, but that doesn't mean that the pain itself, I don't like this narrative. And I think it's great to think about the painful things we've experienced and be like, I wouldn't be the person I am. And things are so much better. Like, I'm better for it. But just because you're better for it doesn't mean that it wasn't a really painful thing to go through at the time. And that doesn't mean, like, I don't know. I just don't love this narrative. I also just don't think you as an outsider should ever say that, like, something traumatic, like, what Ariana went through was the best thing that ever happened to her. That is for her to say. I would never want, like, I've been through traumatic experiences and I've like written about them, and obviously like I've never like, it wasn't to the level of like Ariana, but like I think a lot about this idea of like profiting off of art, or like, or profiting off of trauma, or making art out of trauma, or anything in that capacity. And I would genuinely really hate if I were to like write a book one day about things that I experienced and making the most out of it, or like taking painful experiences and turning it into wisdom or to a lesson or to something that you're proud of. Because I will say the things I've written about traumatic experiences of mine, they are some of my proudest accomplishments. Like the pieces I've written about my traumatic experiences in college. Like sometimes I read them and I'm like, wow, like I am genuinely proud of it. And I did make it into something positive, but that doesn't mean that the thing I experienced within itself, and I'm a much better person and I am who I am today because of all that shit that I went through, but that doesn't mean that it was an inherent positive. It doesn't mean that I don't wish I didn't have to go through those things. I really don't like this narrative that it's the best thing that ever happened to her, because I feel like they're basically saying that she doesn't have the right to be upset. And I don't think that's healthy. I just feel like the constant focus on everything she's gained really invalidates and dismisses the loss. Just because you gained something from a loss doesn't mean the loss wasn't a loss. Like, I don't know. Anyways, Sheena in confessional says she's afraid if she says anything about wanting to move past the anger and hatred that Ariana will cut her out. Again, I think it's just about the way you say it. I think, and I don't know, I don't want to speak for Ariana, but I think it's important to just to acknowledge the pain, to be like, I know this is really painful and this has been really hard, and I understand why you're angry. I look forward to the day where it doesn't upset you. Like anything where it's about how you talk about moving forward, you know? If you talk about moving forward in a way that acknowledges where you are now and the pain you're in now, then I think that's okay. I think it's just sometimes when people talk about moving forward, they talk about like letting go and ignoring things, you know? Anyways, moving on. Ariana and her interior designer meet at her house and they go through the inventory to figure out what she bought for the house, because she's not going to be leaving the stuff she purchased at Tom's hands. Like she says in confessionals that she thinks that Tom probably thought that he would offer to buy her out and she would just take the money and be fine. And she's not going to do that. She's going to make sure that if she contributed financially to something, that it's like split evenly. And I think that's totally fair. Like, I think that that's the exact issue that Tom is like, that Tom just is like, I'll give you money and you'll be free, when Ariana wants things to be more equitable than that, which I side with Ariana, but when do I not? I mean, I can admit Ariana's wrong, but overall I am team Ariana more often than I'm not. So at the beach day, Ariana says she's pretty sure Tom's coming because she saw his stripy crochet thing in the dryer, which was funny because then he comes down the beach and he's wearing his stripy crochet thing. James draws a line in the sand. Then Schwartz brought Sheena a Capri Sun. I don't know why I wrote that. That's so irrelevant, but I thought it was kind of cute. I have a soft spot for Schwartz, okay? I wish I didn't, but what can I say? The triple Libra really speaks to me. Sandoval and Schwartz talk about how they're going to a singles event on Saturday, and Schwartz jokes about Katie going, and Brock says that she'll leave with somebody else and he will leave alone. He jokes, Schwartz does, as long as it's not Max. And then Schwartz says the Max thing has brought them closer together because they're the same now. Again, no, they're not. And she says that they're not, because he was getting it the entire time they were together. And he says from a statistical standpoint, he was pretty faithful. And like, this is the kind of shit that makes me enjoy Schwartz. It's not funny. And if I was his ex-wife, I'd be like, that's really rude and fucked up. Like, you're really trying to pull out a fucking calculator to be like, well, if we were together 12 years and I cheated on you like 3 days, then statistically I was really faithful. It's like, no, like I would not like that if that happened to me. But it's funny. Like, if he was a character, I would be like, this is so funny. But anyways, Katie asks Sandoval if he knew about the Sheena and Schwartz kiss, and he says no. But then we see a flashback to last week when Schwartz told Lala, and he said that he told Sandoval when it happened, and that they were riffing about it the other day. So Sandoval, according to Schwartz, not only was told when it happened, but remembered this happened recently. So Sandoval's a liar once again. Unreliable narrator, Tom Sandoval. Sheena says almost every guy in the group has been flirty with her, and it's like, why is she bringing that up? He says he was a recipient, and he was like, maybe I was more of a recipient of the flirting. And then Brock jokingly asks if, like, that's what he said to Raquel when he started their thing. Sandoval's like, that's low-hanging fruit. Ariana asks if they can have the conversation not in front of her because it's disgusting. And I agree. And again, this is the kind of shit that makes me really hate Brock. Schwartz is like, let's take a breather. Typical Libra of him. Then Katie brings up the Anne thing and Anne being out of a job. He says he did not fire her. She has since she was fired, as I talked about earlier. Anyways, he says he didn't fire her. He just told her to take a couple days off. James is like, who's there to mediate? Ariana says she hasn't had to deal with that. James asks about Maya, if she feels that she's safe right now, and Ariana says yes, and that Anne wasn't Maya's babysitter. And then Schwartz says that they're great dog and cat parents, and Ariana says she is. They're her pets. She paid the adoption fee. He makes a jab about that being the only bill that she's paid. Gross. And he's like, according to your logic, since you paid the adoption fee and she's your dog, then because my people found the house and did the loan, blah, 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 blah. And she's like cutting him off. And it's like, actually, those are two completely different things, because legally the house belongs to her. But pet ownership, it's like not that cut and dry, because it's not like a house that you purchase together. So like legally, she has more claim to the, you know, that's not, the house is under her name. Like, that would only be somewhat equivalent if like you were the only one in the deed of the house or whatever, but she was paying you for the, like, I don't know. The house belongs to her legally. That's a completely separate thing. I can't stand that, man. It's really not the same thing. A dog is not legally yours in the same way a house is. So if you were trying to legally fight over the dog, the adoption fee would be like a big way to determine that, from my understanding. I don't know. I am not a lawyer. Sandoval in confessional says everything he says and does triggers her, but he had the delusional idea that they'd be even more civil than Schwartz and Katie. And it's like, maybe you could have been if you hadn't fucked her friend when she was grieving. Then Lala arrives. Ariana's upset. She says she won't do this again, but they keep doing this with her. She says he's talking shit about her when he's the one who ruined her life. She asks for them to keep him away from her. And Brock is like, that's what we've been doing. He's here with his tail tucked between his legs. Like, literally, shut the fuck up, Brock. You know that part of Bodies, 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 which I just watched, loved it, where where she's like, I've never told anybody this, but I have body dysmorphia. And then she's like, shut the fuck up, Alice. That's me about Brock. Like, every single time Brock talks, I'm like, shut the fuck up, Brock. Anyways, then Ariana says he's never going to get it. He feels very comfortable talking shit, and no one's calling him out, and it's super disrespectful. James in confessional says Ariana would be happier if she released some of this, and it's like, I don't disagree, but I think it's just a complicated situation. Then Ariana says the guy should step in as men to be like, this isn't cool, because Tom is more likely to listen to other guys. Brock is like, you don't think he's taking it? He left. Lala says she has to remember that he's in defense mode, and Ariana says she doesn't need Lala to play devil's advocate. And on the defense mode comment, I think that is Sandoval's biggest issue. He is in defense mode all the time. And I don't think that's healthy for him. Why is nobody saying to Sandoval, hey, you gotta stop being on defense mode. You gotta just put your sword down and listen, say sorry. Like, people are telling Ariana, you have to remember he's in defense mode. Instead of telling Sandoval, hey dude, maybe stop being in defense mode all the time. Nobody is attacking your character. I mean, that's not true. People are attacking his character, but maybe being like, nobody is attacking, I don't know. Like, somebody needs to tell Sandoval that he needs to not always be in defense mode. Come to the table with some humility. Lala in confessionals asks, at what point are you going to choose inner peace? And I just find this frustrating because it's like, this is really fresh. At some point, she will choose inner peace. But right now, she's still... And I do think them living in the same house, obviously, is causing a lot of problems. And I think that the disconnect is that a lot of the cast is judging her for staying in the house. But I just don't think it's that simple. I think when she's moved out of the house and that financial stuff, it will be a lot easier. That is objectively something that is causing them a lot of conflict, is being under the same roof. But they're blaming Ariana for that situation instead of having compassion for the reason that she is still there, if that makes sense. But it's like, I do think she will choose inner peace. I think it's a process. And I don't think she's there in the process yet. And I think trying to rush the process is just going to not help. It's not going to help at all. Ariana says he'll never be remorseful and everyone is shoving him down her throat. What do they expect, etc. And the episode ends on it to be continued. Some extended clips that came out on Peacock. There's like a clip where he's talking about the litter box thing. Again, I will say, as a cat parent, I don't know how often she cleans the litter box, but it should be at least once a day. Not defending Sandoval because he doesn't even clean up after himself. He had Anne to do that. But just for the health of your cat, it is healthier, because you don't want your cat to end up becoming constipated. Cat constipation is very dangerous. I speak from experience. I have the biggest health issues my cats have had have been digestive issues, whether that be constipation or like irritable, like, you know, just digestive issues. So I speak from experience. Cleaning your cat's litter box every day is really important. Deep cleaning it, depending on what kind of litter you have, like once a week. If you have like clumping litter, like I don't know, that is important. Ariana, I know you do have some money, so I you know, maybe get the litter robot that like works automatically and you only have to scoop the little, you don't have to scoop, you just have to pull out a bag and throw it away like once a week, from my understanding. Like, it literally filters out the poop for you. So maybe consider that a sponsorship, perhaps. I don't really know. I would love to get a litter robot personally, but I cannot afford it. That is my, like, if, like, you know, that trend that was going around, that's like, if I won the lottery, I wouldn't tell anybody, but there would be signs. Mine would be that I get a litter robot. Like, I'm not even kidding. And I actually don't mind cleaning the litter box. I foster kittens, and, like, I've dealt with enough kitten poop. I've had kittens have diarrhea. Like, honestly, cleaning cat poop is not like something that bothers me in any capacity. But if that is like something you struggle with, like, I've heard the litter robot's really good. It's just, it's like hundreds of dollars. So it's quite an investment, you know? And I don't exactly have like hundreds of dollars to spare at the end of every month. But anyways, moving on, other shows that I want to talk about. The first one I want to talk about, and this is going to be brief because I've been recording longer than I anticipated, but maybe next week I'll dive more deep into some of these shows. So I am almost done with Desperate Housewives. I literally have like 3 episodes left, and I haven't watched it in the last week because I don't want to finish it. The good thing about Desperate Housewives, I will say, is I went through it so quickly, and I feel like it has such good rewatch potential that I will be like rewatching it. Maybe not like right away, but like I'll take like in a couple months and maybe I'll rewatch it. The characters are so good. The storylines are batshit crazy in the best way. I love it. I have to say, when I started the first season, I really didn't like Brie. Love her now. Big fan of Brie. There was a storyline, I think in season 8, which is the last season, maybe season 7. I don't know. I go through the episodes so quickly. Like, I will literally watch like 10 episodes. I literally just on my days off, just watch like a bunch of episodes in a row. Or when I get off of work, I'll watch like 4 episodes in a row and stay up like way too late watching the show. Like, I just go through episodes so quickly at a time that I'm like, I don't remember what seasons things were in. But Brie has a son named Andrew, and he's gay. And when he first comes out, like, that is a big point of contention. And I didn't really like her because I'm always going to side with the gay kid over the homophobic parent. But she eventually comes around and they have a good relationship. And in one of the late seasons, I think it was season 8, but it might have been like end of season 7. But like in either season 7 or season 8, Andrew comes home and he's like, I met somebody. And it's a woman, and she's like so mad. She's not mad, but she's like, you know, you're here, you're queer, I'm cool with it. Like, she's like, you're gay, it's okay that you're gay, why are you really funny. And it's because the woman is like rich and he's like struggling financially. And in his defense, like his fiance, the woman does know that he's gay. Okay. But she wanted companionship. They end up breaking up and it's fine. But like, I really like the growth. Something I've really begun to realize, because I feel like people always talk a lot about like 30 episode seasons and like all that kind of stuff. And I've always agreed with what people say about like TV shows used to be really long. But I think something I'm realizing now as, because I haven't properly, I rewatch a lot of shows that have like 30 episode seasons and have like those filler plot lines and stuff like that. But I think I haven't like properly watched a show for the first time from like that era of TV when they had like 30 episode seasons and there would be like filler episodes in this kind of way. And I think it's really like watching Desperate Housewives has really made me realize how much, and this isn't always true, obviously, but I feel like the beauty of those filler episodes is you get so much more insight into the characters. You know, like that is the beauty of the filler episodes. It's like, yeah, nothing really happened to advance the plot, but you got to know the characters in all these different ways. And Desperate Housewives is such a good show because the circumstances and the situations, like more often than not, they're like ridiculous and all these crazy things wouldn't happen on the same street. You know, like it's out there and it's like not realistic. Like somebody goes blind and then they get their vision back and like somebody's in a coma and then they come out of the coma and people get run over by cars, people have secret kids, you know, there's a bunch of crazy storylines, which I personally love. But I think what makes this show so good is that there are all these crazy storylines, but the characters are also like very well-rounded, full people. You see their growth, you see them through different phases of life, and I think the filler episodes really help with that. You get so much insight into who these women are. And now that I'm almost done with the show, I really like it. I will say I still don't understand why people hate Susan. Like a lot of people hate Susan. And I don't get it. Like unless she does something crazy in the last two episodes, I like Susan. But I don't know. I'm really excited to rewatch it with fresh eyes. Like I'm excited to, now that I've seen the whole series and I like Brie, I'm excited to rewatch her like relationship with Rex for the first time. I'm excited to rewatch it with the knowledge I have now, because like Tom and Lynette, I didn't really have any strong feelings towards them at the beginning. Now I've seen their relationship through many different phases. Right now in the last season, there's a lot of conflict between Tom and Lynette in a way that's like making me not like Tom. And like, I don't know, I'm just excited to watch it. That's one of my favorite things about rewatching shows is getting to see the growth and the change, and I'm just excited to rewatch and pick up on stuff I did before. I'm excited. I think it has such great rewatch potential, and I do really recommend Desperate Housewives. I think I've seen a lot of people call it addicting, and I really do think it is, because it's so captivating. Like the storylines are so unrealistic, but also the characters feel real. It's a great show. It's serious and dramatic, but it's also really funny and lighthearted and like not heavy. Like sometimes I feel like there are some shows where it's like either a sitcom and it's all the same kind of humor, like everything is a joke, or it's like a very serious, everything is serious. And I like the humor of like, there are very serious plot lines. There are times where I like genuinely get very sad or emotionally touched by a storyline. I'm invested in the characters. Like I care. It's serious. It's not just like lighthearted the entire time, but it's not joke after joke after joke, but it's also not so serious that it feels heavy, you know? And they do talk about heavy things and serious things, but like I always think, I don't remember what season this was, but it was one of the early seasons. There's like a really serious episode where there's like a hostage situation in a grocery store, and like I was like sad. Like I genuinely cried watching the episode. A character that I didn't even give a fuck about died, and I was like sad about it because of how well it was done. And then the next episode, they're back to it being like a silly goofy show. Like it, I don't know, I love that kind of genre melding where it has like the dramatics of like, oh, somebody has a secret kid, but also like the humor. Like, it's great. The characters are great. It's well acted. I'm a big fan. I'm excited to rewatch. I have to thank TikTok because I wouldn't have ever thought to watch Desperate Housewives if it wasn't for the constant Eva Longoria clips on my For You page. Who runs those accounts where they just post random clips of TV shows or movies? Because if that's some kind of marketing tactic, it worked on me. Like, I'm not even kidding. I'm really excited to finish Desperate Housewives. I'm sad to, but I'm excited to as well. Another show that I've been watching lately or rewatching really is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I've seen Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I never watched the final episode. I watched everything except the final episode because I didn't want it to be over. And then years went by and I forgot that I'd never watched the final episode. And I really wanted to watch something and I was really in the mood for a musical, but I also wanted to watch like a show. So I was like, let me watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend because it was between that or Glee. And I was like, I'm not in the mood to watch Glee. So I was like, let me watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And I have not watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I listen to the music all the time, but I haven't watched it since I moved to California. And it's actually so fun as a California resident now. And I live in LA and it takes place in West Covina. And while I've never been to West Covina, and it's a different vibe than LA. I live in the valley. It's all LA County, but there's different vibes to different parts of LA, which I think is an obvious thing to say. So there are obviously differences, but it's just fun now that I live here, especially because I work for like daily news publications. So I feel like even parts of LA that I don't live in, I feel like I know generally the news about stuff. I know about the different areas. And so it's just fun. It's fun to watch as a California resident. And it's so great. The music's good. It's fun. I recommend Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I really do. I think that show also does a good job of like talking about serious things, but it's all really always really fun. It's the music's good. 10 out of 10 would recommend Crazy Ex-Girlfriend if you haven't seen it. I'm excited to finish it. I haven't done like a rewatch of all the seasons, well, ever actually, because it ended. And then I haven't like rewatched from the beginning. So I'm excited to finish that. I'm not very far along, so I don't have much to say so far. Just that it's a fun experience now as an adult who lives in California watching it. But what else do I have to say? That's all I have to say about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Okay, the last show I want to talk about is a new show on HBO Max, or I guess now it's just called Max, whatever. I'm going to still call it HBO Max. And it's called Girls on the Bus. I was looking for something to watch because I wanted to watch a show, but I didn't want to keep watching that. I was looking for something to watch. I was like, I don't know what to watch. And so I went on Max and I saw this show, and it's about political reporters. And I will give anything to do with journalism a chance. I watched a little bit of the Gina Rodriguez Not Dead Yet show because she's like an obituary writer. Didn't love it. I didn't get past like the third episode. Just not really like the tone. She like works for a Southern California newspaper. I'm like, that's too close to home. This show, Girls on the Bus, is about like reporters on the campaign trail, and it follows primarily four female reporters of all different kinds. Like there's one reporter who's been doing it for like generations. Then there's like a Black Republican who works for a conservative news outlet. Then there's like a Gen Z TikToker type person. And then there's somebody who she like works for a print newspaper. She's a little bit more green, if you will, but she, like, I don't know. It's just really interesting. I love following female reporters specifically. I find really interesting. I'm really enjoying it so far. The characters are really interesting. I like that there's kind of like multiple different perspectives that we are being shown this environment through. Like all of them have different experiences with reporting because of their own lived experience and because of the kind of platform that they're reporting for or reporting on. Like, I don't know. It's really interesting so far. If you are interested at all in journalism type stuff or even political stuff, like about the campaign trail, it's obviously a fictionalized, like it's not like they are following Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Like it's not that. The candidates are made of people. It's an alternate universe, if you will. I mean, not completely. I guess it's just like, it's very clearly not about the about the 2024 campaign, but that's okay, because I think it would be kind of impossible to have made a show, because shows take like a while to make a show, and for it to be like accurate, I would prefer it be like a fictionalized campaign than like them trying to talk about the current presidential campaign, you know, like it would just wouldn't make sense. But it's really well done. I like the characters. I watched it all in like one night, and then I watched the episode. There are new episodes every Thursday. I don't know how many episodes are going to be. There are currently 5 out. I watched the first 4 episodes in one night, and then I watched the 5th episode when it came out on Thursday. And it's really good. I don't have anything that intelligent to say about it. The show kind of starts with like the narrator of the show. I don't remember her name. It's the actress who plays Marley, played Marley in Glee, Melissa, I don't know how you pronounce her last name, but she is kind of narrating, and she's talking about how, like, it's kind of like we see her getting into some kind of legal trouble, like she's arrested or something, and then it's like, she plays Sadie McCarthy. And Sadie's kind of narrating, and she's like, I swear I didn't do it or whatever. And then we cut to like 6 months, I don't know how many months earlier. I didn't take notes when I was watching the show. I normally take notes because I don't have that good of a memory. But I did want to talk about this show because I've been thinking about it since I watched it. And I recommended it to my sister. And if anybody's listening who needs a show to watch, I wanted to recommend it. But they cut to like months earlier. So there's kind of like this mystery of like, what happened? Why did she get arrested? What is she being framed for? So that's kind of like a thing. And there's like, she gets like a burner phone. It's like a tip to anonymous line for the newspaper. And the whole time I'm like, I don't know. There's like, it's kind of fun because there's like a mystery aspect of it, but the characters are also really interesting. There's obviously interpersonal relationships between reporters, between Sadie and the press secretary of the candidate she's following. Her and one of the candidates have history because like on the first campaign trail that she was on, she was really, really like rooting for this one candidate, and then she lost and she like cried and she became a meme. Sadie did, because she was so devastated. I don't know. It's like, it's a really interesting show. Again, I should have taken notes, but I don't have notes about it. I'm excited to see where it goes. I want there to be a season 2, even though I'm like, I don't know, maybe. Well, I'll see how season 1 ends, because sometimes shows, you know, wrap up well. But I like the writing. I like the angle. I'm always, like, I will always give a journalism show or movie a chance. And I like this angle because I feel like there's a lot of interesting commentary, even from, like, Sadie, on how women have to exist within the world of journalism to be taken seriously and all of that, that I think is really interesting. I feel like a lot of the, when I think about like journalism, not always, but like a lot of the movies that deal with like journalism and women in journalism, I don't feel like I've seen this angle yet. Like it feels kind of fresh to me. I enjoy it. I'm really enjoying it. I like that there are like different generations and they all have like different perspectives and experiences reporting. Like the Gen Z kind of TikTok character, she has a different perspective and outlet than like the more seasoned reporter who's like been doing this for a while. Like it's just really interesting. And I think as somebody who is like, I work in the journalism field, even though I'm a designer, so it's a different role. Obviously I don't really, that's not really my career exactly, but I am always just interested in like generational stuff and how, I don't know, I find it really interesting and very enjoyable to watch. If you like journalism at all, I recommend it. I think even if you don't like journalism, maybe like watch the first episode. If you're intrigued, keep watching. I don't know. I like it. I'm excited to see where it goes. Maybe next week I'll have more like detailed thought out notes. I went on longer than I thought I would about Vanderpump Rules. So I've kind of been talking for a while, so I'm going to wrap this up. But thank you so much for tuning in. I have nothing intelligent to say. Please follow me wherever you listen to podcasts. Share it with a friend. If you have any TV show recommendations, let me know. And thank you so much. Have a great week. You'll hear from me next week. Bye, guys.